And for this class, there was a question. Who was able to answer the question? I'll read the question. Write a paragraph, because we were asked to read the first 12 verses of chapter 3. And the question was, write a paragraph that connects the essential points about the following: hearing and chanting, devotional service, worship the demigods, worshiping Krishna, association with pure devotees, attraction to Krishna, and material desires. It covers everything in the first 12 verses. Who's written this? Anyone? Boli? This particular chapter that we're beginning, chapter 3, of course, has its roots in earlier chapters. Way back in the first canto, in the fourth chapter, the sages of Namasharanya, they ask Suta Goswami as to the story, the happenings that occurred that led to the Srimad Bhagavatam being spoken by Sukadeva Goswami to the great king Maharaj Prakrit. After all, Maharaj Prakrit was a powerful ruler. What powerful ruler that we know of just renounces everything, goes to the bank of the Ganges River, decides to fast until death, knowing that he has only 7 days to live, and he asks an essential question, perhaps the essential question of life: what is the duty, what is the prime activity, what is the recommended activity for one who is about to die? This is the essential question. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains clearly why, when he says, Saratad Bhava Bharata, that whatever one is thinking at the time of death, whatever desires fill one's consciousness, one will take a corresponding next birth. Therefore, what one is doing, what one's consciousness is filled with in one's life, will certainly determine what one is thinking at the time of death, which will determine our next situation, our next body, our next life, our next facility, our next mood, our next field of activities. This is determined, our next body is determined by what our consciousness is full of, what thoughts and mood, desires our consciousness is full of when we leave this body at death. So when Prakrit Maharaj asks the sages who come to see him, he asks them this question. There is a disagreement amongst them as to what is the best thing to do as one is dying. And when the exalted sage Sukadeva appears, all the other sages give him veneration and respect, and they offer him the principal seat so he could speak and give his opinion, because his opinion is most authoritative. So the first thing that he does in the first chapter of the second canto is glorify the question itself. Because who in this world, if we speak to so many people in this world, who is asking this question? What should I fill my consciousness with? Even religious people, even spiritual people, no one is asking this question. What should I fill my consciousness with so that when I leave this body, that will determine my next birth? So therefore, that points obviously to the essential nature of filling our consciousness, being careful what we fill our consciousness with. So just asking that question, what should I think of in preparation for my death? What should I hear about? What should I do? That thoughtful question shows the mark of an exalted personality. And this exalted personality who was asking that question, Maharaj Prickett, he already knew the answer because he was a devotee of Krishna. And he knew that his whole life he had been focusing his mind upon Krishna. And therefore, his own inclination and desire was to focus his mind upon Krishna and hear about Krishna till the very end of his life. But just to confirm that that was the proper thing, he was asking this question. And Sukadev Goswami glorified him because he knew that what Maharaj Prickett's actual desire was. And he himself, Sukadev Goswami, was also an exalted devotee of Krishna, the most exalted devotee of Krishna. So therefore the question which he knew the answer to, and which was the desire of Maharaj Prickett to hear about Krishna, was so pleasing. It was so pleasing to Sukadeva Goswami because he would get an opportunity to speak about Krishna in the presence of this exalted devotee, Prickett Maharaj, who was going to leave the world. So, Maharaj Prickett, sitting there, heard Sukadev speak about the glories of Krishna, the glories of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and the glories of constantly chanting the holy name of Krishna, saturating our consciousness fully with thoughts of Krishna and great devotion and great love. So first, Sukadev glorified this and he said a very nice verse, etanna vidyamananam itchitam akuto bayam yoginam nripanirnitam harinam rukirtanam. That regardless, he explained to him right from the very beginning of the first chapter, just as he was more or less beginning to speak, he explained that regardless of one's position, whether one is itchitam, full of desires, yoginam, full of the desires for siddhis, to travel throughout the universe, to have yogic perfections, whether one is full of material desires or desireless even, if one is free from all material desires, regardless of what one's consciousness is, the best thing for him to do was Harinam Unakirtana. And Nirnrinam means, this is the conclusion of all the scriptures, all the shastras, that one should focus his consciousness on Harikatha, hearing about Krishna. So this was actually the first thing, more or less, that Sukadev said. But then he explained also to encourage Maharaj Prickett, after all he was soon to die, and in the bloom of his life, he was going to die. So to encourage him, he explained what is the use of a long life, live like a tree, or living hundreds of years, or 100 years, or 90 years in full health, if there is no higher consciousness, like a tree, like a tortoise. Sometimes turtles or tortoises, they live for hundreds of years. But what are they thinking of? Just how to eat flies or whatever. Anyone expert on turtles and know what tortoises and turtles actually are thinking? Yeah. One thing they're thinking is, wherever I go, I take my house with me. And I'm safe. And they live for hundreds of years. But what is the use of such a life? What is the use of that? Better to have a short life even. A short life that is surcharged with meaning and higher developed consciousness. Trees live sometimes for thousands of years. What is the use of such a long life? It's not inherently wonderful. So he's encouraging Prickit Maharaj that you're thinking that it's such a disadvantage. You may be thinking it's a disadvantage that you're going to die, but no. If you can, at the end of your life, illuminate your consciousness with Krishna consciousness, with Krishna Katha, surcharge, saturate your consciousness with transcendence, then when you leave this world, when your body drops, you will go to the eternal place, Golok Vrindavan. And he then gave the example of Katvanga Maharaj, one warrior who received, after fighting a great battle, received the benediction to know, or he was asked, what do you want? We will give you anything you want. And he said, I want to know how much longer I have in this world. When he heard the answer of just a moment, he prepared himself. In a moment, he focused his mind on Krishna. He was powerful. He had strong will. He controlled his consciousness fully and focused his mind on Krishna and achieved the highest results. So it can be done in a short time. Sukadeva Goswami told Maharaj Prickit, you have 7 days. Use that time. Then he began explaining a method of transcendence, which is basically Jnana Yoga. He explained that one should be bold and become detached from all matter when one is preparing for death, when one is older, elderly, or knows that he's going to die. Why surround oneself with that which is familiar and just be attached to that because it's comfortable? No. One should give that up. Be a sannyasi. Leave everything behind and practice looking at this world in such a way that whatever one sees in this world, he will connect it. He will see it in relationship to Lord Vishnu, the Varatarupa, the Vishvarupa, the universal form. Because in fact, as Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhumira Polalo Vayu, Kamanubura Evaja, Ahankar Ityame, Bhina Prakritam Astada. That everything in this material world is connected with Krishna. Everything comes from Him. Mama Tejo Angsa Sambhava. Everything comes from Krishna. Nothing is separate from Krishna. Everything is resting upon Krishna. So everything therefore has a connection to Krishna. So one, when one sees the world for a materialistic person, instead of seeing the world as something meant for my own pleasure, one should see it in relationship to the Lord. This world is not meant for me to grab and squeeze. No, it is Krishna's and it is meant for Him. But this Jnana Yoga, where one sees, more or less separates himself from matter, does not directly deal with that person who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagawan, who is the source of everything. It is an impersonal type of meditation. So then in the second chapter, Sutta continues speaking and explains, first of all, that when one is living in this world, one should not try to expand one's desires. Practically speaking, if we put the whole world in our hands, it would not satisfy us. Our desires would grow proportionately. So one should simplify one's living. Sutta explains. One should simplify his living and live as simply as possible. We may have our different standards as far as what is possible for us to comfortably live, because if someone fasts all the time, for example, if he doesn't have that type of a nature, all he's going to be thinking about is what? Food, 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 food. So not that we just perform austerities and there's something inherently wonderful about that. What's important is to fix one's mind, to not be involved in materialistic endeavors, because that will not satisfy us, but rather we should minimize our needs, not try to expand and inflame our needs. And rather, we should withdraw our consciousness, our mind, from that type of endeavor, and we should push our mind towards the spiritual. So Sukadev, or Sutta, explains that, and he explains in a wonderful way how simply one can actually live. Practically, it is meant for a different time where one can just lie down anywhere, using one's arm as a pillow, use the bark of trees as one's clothing. Although if someone probably tried to do this in downtown Perth or New York, he'd probably start a fad, tree bark clothing or something like that. It probably goes well with green hair. But the point is to just not get involved in material life, and rather focus one's consciousness on the spiritual. And especially, he admonishes spiritual people, if you can live simply like this, why go from door to door to materialistic people begging from them to attain money for yourself for sense gratification? No. Live simply and focus your consciousness on the spiritual. So after explaining that, the simplicity of a sadhu, a holy person's life, he explains the next step above the process of jnana yoga, where one is very detached and learns to see the material energy in relationship with the spiritual, with Krishna, with Vishnu. One step above that is the process of yoga. So jnana yoga is based on renunciation. Jnana yoga, sankhya yoga, almost the same. Based on renunciation. And above that is the process of yoga, where one practices Ashtanga yoga, the eight limb practice of yoga, with the ultimate purpose of controlling the life airs and moving the soul through the different chakras, to the different energy centers in the body, and eventually just leaving the body as useless. And there are two ways to do this. And people who, of course, this is very rare, especially nowadays. Very rare. But one who leaves the body in this way, he can do it in one out of two ways. If he wants to more or less tour the material universe to see something, go visit this planet, go do this, go do that, he can take his subtle or astral body with him and do so many wonderful things. But one who is a devotee, yogi devotee, who does not wish to tour and enjoy the material world, he can take the yogic process to gradually purify his consciousness further and further and further and elevate himself and eventually go through the Sisumara planets to the Satyaloka, to Janaloka, Mahaloka, Satyaloka, and then eventually through great, great, great and subtle purification, leave everything, all to break all his connection with matter through this yogic purificatory process. Break every connection with himself and matter, and the soul itself can enter into the spiritual world. So, after establishing yoga's purpose is spiritual, going to the spiritual world, and after establishing how the purpose of the renunciation is to gain or the purpose of the renunciation is to ultimately practice this yoga. Then, at the end of the second chapter, again, Sutta describes the final conclusion, the goal. The conclusion, the goal. And what is the best process of achieving that goal? Because he's explained the process of jnana yoga, the process of astanga yoga. Now, what is the conclusion? So he explains in text 33, for those who are wandering in the material universe, there is no more auspicious, nothing, no better means of deliverance than what is aimed at the direct devotional service of Lord Krishna. That process of yoga, of renunciation, is so difficult. And the end of that, in any case, is devotional service to Krishna. And not only does he conclude this, he explains that Lord Brahma, the most intelligent person of this universe, similarly concludes this. And one can intellectually know this as well. And then in the last two verses of this chapter, second chapter, he therefore concludes, Tasmat savat marajan hari savatra savada shottavya kirtitavyascha smatavyo bhagavan rinam. O king, it is therefore essential that every human being hear about, glorify, and remember the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, always and everywhere. This is the conclusion. This is the answer to the question that Pariksit Maharaj asked at the moment of death. And we can imagine the urgency that one asks a question. Because in our life, there are so many things we're interested in, we're curious about. We want to do this, we like this. But when we're dying, anything that is unessential, if we have spots on our carpet, if you know we may want to buy one of these, or we may be hoping that a certain team wins the World Cup or something. But when one is dying, one doesn't care about these superfluous things. One is interested what questions one, an intelligent person, has at the moment of death. They should be the most essential questions of life. And therefore, this question that Pariksit Maharaj has asked has been answered, saying that every person, at all times, all places, when one is dying, or in one's life, one, the essential message is that one should hear about shottavya, kirtitavya, chasmartavya. One should hear about, glorify, and remember Krishna. And one's consciousness, one's mind, one's existence should be filled with loving thoughts of Krishna. This is the purpose of life, because that will carry us to the spiritual world. And if our consciousness is filled with petty, insignificant, materialistic desires, like carrying our house around with us, or flying through the air gracefully like a swan or a hawk, or swimming through the waters, underneath the waters effortlessly, never even having to come up for air. If our mind is filled with those things at the time of death, we will get a suitable body. So that basically was the answer to the question that Pariksit Maharaj asked. And he concludes the second chapter by saying, those who drink through oral reception, that means drinking through the ear by hearing about Krishna, fully filled with the nectarian messages of Lord Krishna, the beloved of the devotees. They purify the polluted aim of life because we have so many desires in our life. That hearing purifies those desires. And then such people go back to Godhead, go back to the eternal realm, to the spiritual world, to the lotus feet of Him, Krishna. This is where we belong. So that ends the second chapter. Then, in the third chapter, in the first verse, Sukadeva Goswami tells Maharaj Prickett that now I have answered your question as to the duty of an intelligent man, Manishinam. Manishinam means one who is very, very thoughtful. People are not thoughtful in this world. People are just simply not thoughtful. How should I use my life? We live as if we will live forever. And then suddenly we find ourselves 70 years old, cynical, not being able to enjoy all the things we worked so hard to get. Pains everywhere, misery, worked so hard, no possibility of enjoyment, not being able to work, only knowing work is everything and enjoyment is everything. But a thoughtful man can see the future and understand this is not what I should do. So therefore, Sukadeva Goswami says, this is the duty of a thoughtful man. I have answered your question as to what a thoughtful person should do in preparation for death. Now, Prabhupada explains right at the end of this purport, not all human beings are intelligent. So people really don't want to think about these things, actually speaking. Clinging to material life, which is doomed. Clinging to something that is doomed, obviously so. So that's not intelligent or thoughtful. Not all human beings are intelligent. So the importance of human life is not always understood. Therefore, manishinam, meaning thoughtful, is particularly used here. A manishinam person like Maharaj Prickett must therefore take to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna and fully engage himself in devotional service, hearing, chanting of the holy name and pastimes of the Lord, which are all Hari Katamrita. This action is especially recommended for one preparing for death. So, the situation is that one should focus one's mind on Krishna only. Really, really, that's all that anyone and everyone should do. Give up everything else, giving up all our other extraneous attempts. We should take care of ourselves and simply focus our mind on Krishna. There are so many examples in the history of the world of saints who have done this. In the Krishna conscious tradition, our great heroes, the six Goswamis and so many of our great acharyas, they have given up everything. 24 hours a day, practically. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Oh Krishna, oh Srimati Radharani. Just their heart simply full of this desire. In the Christian tradition, in even the Jewish tradition, the Muslim tradition, Islamic tradition, in every tradition, there are people who are thoughtful and serious about life and have given up everything to focus their mind on the Supreme. Regardless of the differences of maybe understanding of what that Supreme is, but they were serious and thoughtful and very intelligent and very determined and very powerful too. But then the question comes, okay, that's for people who are very pure. But what should I do? I have material desires. I am not at that stage. What should I do? Now what Sukadeva Goswami wants to tell Maharaj Prickett is what you should do is the same thing that these people do. according to your capacity, according, regardless of your desires, according to your nature, you should still focus your mind on Krishna. But in his indirect way, first indirect, he's going to explain just the opposite. What to do if one has material desires? This, what he's going to explain in text 2 through text 9, is the Vedic system for fulfilling material desires. Now before we just read some of the ones on this list of what to do, we should understand the principle is, and how the Vedic system differs so much from the Western system, is in the Vedic system, if one wants to have something material, one worships a superior person. And by the mercy of that superior person, that more powerful person, he gets his desires met. That is the Vedic system. But in the Western system, no one will acknowledge that anyone is superior to him. So that causes a problem. If one wants one's material desires fulfilled, one never goes and begs and supplicates to a superior. That is against the principles. Rather, one trusts oneself and one does it by one's own power. One satisfies one's desire and knock this one out of the way and knock that one out of the way. Trust yourself, believe in yourself. Do it. You can do it if your desire is strong enough. If you want it, you create your own reality. So what happens in these two variant systems? If one follows the Vedic system, one will have his desires met and one will become purified. And on the other hand, in the other system, rather than becoming purified, one will may or may not get one's desires met, but one will become degraded and happiness will avoid one. Instead of going upward to goodness, one will become degraded to ignorance. But aside from that point, here is what Sukadev Goswami says. If you have material desires, and the question is, what should I do? Should I focus my mind on Krishna? What should I do? How should I satisfy them? Even though I know what is right, what should I do? So he says, if you desire good fortune, worship Durga Devi, or the superintendent of the material world. And maybe you will take your birth in Bengal. Yes, because they have Durga Puja. So many worshippers of Durga Devi there. One desiring to be very powerful should worship fire. One who aspires after money should worship the Vasus, all demigods. One should worship the Rudra incarnations of Lord Shiva if one wants to be a great hero. There are certain personalities that is what is in their mind. They want to be heroic. They want to be a hero. They want to be appreciated like that. If one desires stability in his post, if one wants to gain a position and not be able to be removed from that position, one should worship the earth and the horizon. If one desires a good wife, one should worship the apsaras and the urvasi, society girls of the heavenly kingdom. One who desires to dominate others should worship Lord Brahma, the head of the universe. One who desires tangible fame should worship Lord Vishnu, the personality of Godhead. If one desires to be a greatly learned person, one should worship Lord Shiva. And if one desires a good marital relationship, he should worship the chaste goddess, Uma, the wife of Lord Shiva. Now, Prabhupada, in his purports to these verses, he describes and criticizes those people who have these desires. Why? Because if one has a good wife, if one has wealth, if one has a stable position, if one has fame, if one has health, if one has beauty, regardless of what one has, The real problems of life will not be solved. So this is not considered thoughtfulness. Because the real problem of life is that we're going to die. This material body is doomed. This material body is doomed, and that is the problem. No matter how healthy, wealthy, and materially wise we are, we will die. And no one wants that, and that is the ultimate, as well as the basic problem of material existence. So therefore, the manishi, the thoughtful person, doesn't get involved in these type of desires, fulfilling them. Rather, he focuses his mind on the ultimate problem. And going back to Godhead, finding an ultimate solution to the problem. But yet, all these are described. So if one wants to advance his dynasty, one should worship the various demigods. If one desires domination over a kingdom or an empire, one should worship the Manus. Whatever desires we have, there are ways to fulfill those desires. One who desires victory over an enemy should worship the demons. And one who desires sense gratification should worship the moon. And you will go lunar. But one who desires nothing of material enjoyment should worship the Supreme Personality of God. So an intelligent person should not really do this. Sukadev is not describing that one should do this, but he's explaining the Vedic system, because he's already explained what the jnanis should do. The jnanis should renounce everything and see all matter in relationship to the Vishwarupa, the universal form, Krishna, Vishnu, the spirit. And the yogis should gradually go back to Godhead. So what should the karmis do? Those who have material desires. So here is the typical way that a Vedically centered materialistic person will satisfy his desires by worship the demigods. But now in the 10th, 11th and 12th verse he reaches his conclusion. The 10th verse is very important and should be remembered by all. Akama savakamava mokshakam udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta parusha param. Akama means one who has no desires. That means a devotee. And Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains how this kama means desires, and we generally translate this as meaning it's the negation of desires, having no desires. But as Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, of letters I am the letter A or A. Of letters I am A. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains that akama actually means Krishna desires. So akama, if one has desires to please Krishna, or sarvakama, one has unlimited material desires like the demigod worshippers that we've just heard. If whatever you want, you worship the demigods. Akama sarvakama va. Moksha kama udara di, or if you desire liberation, just to get out of the material world like the yogis or the jnanis, an intelligent person, what will he do? Will he practice jnana yoga? No. Will he practice worshipping the demigods? No. Will he practice astanga yoga? No. Then what will he do? Tivrena, with great power and focus. Bhakti yogena, he will practice bhakti yoga, yajeta, and worship the Purusha Param, the Supreme Person. Prabhupada's translation. A person who has broader intelligence, whether he be full of all material desires, without any material desires, regardless of what one's position is, or desiring liberation, must by all means worship the Supreme Whole, the Personality of Godhead. Cool. The tape. Here's, we'll put on this tape. Well, could someone put it on? Just press the button. Here's Prabhupada speaking on this verse. You have to get the right one though. And could you maybe make sure the volume is right? Okay, no, it's just there may be a lead.
Master recommends, all right, you may be sakama. Sakama means without end of any desires, full of desires. Sarvakama kurmis, those who are working very hard, just like animals. Animals are meant for working hard. But now, men are being educated to work like animals. And there's no way. So they are called kurmis. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna had designated these animals, these kurmi animals, who are working very, very hard, just like hogs and dogs. They have been described in the Bhagavad Gita as Mura. Mura, that's good. Foolish. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur has explained why they are Mura. This could mean they want some eating, sleeping, making. But why so much hard work? The eating, sleeping, making, they just see the birds. They are free. They don't work at night at least. But human beings, they are night. Night after, night duty, I shall get some more money. So there is no way. How they can be happy? They are simply thinking of that I shall work very hard and I shall get money and enjoy my senses. So where is the question of happiness? The kurmis cannot have happiness because their method is to work hard. But how they can be happy? But similarly, jainis, most of karma, after being disgusted that I work so hard throughout my whole life, I could not get peace. Therefore, it is false. Jagat mithya. Mithya means false. This is Shankaracharya philosophy. Jagat mithya. Mithya means false. Brahma sat. Now let me search out where is Brahma and become one with him. That is also another level. Speculating, they have to interpret all these Vedic literature to make God dead, void, impersonal, nullified. So they have to gather their argument. That is another labor, hard labor. So they are also working hard. Yogi, they want to show some magic. I can walk on the water. I can fly in the air without any agency. I can go this planet, that planet. Yogis can do that. They have got this magical power. I can create immediately gold. And if you can show this magical piece, immediately you get so many. But that kind of yogi also very yet to be found. And now in your country, yogi means who can show some gymnastics. So they are also working hard because they have a karma. The yogi, he wants to be very popular by showing magic. Because general people, they cannot walk on the water. But if somebody can walk on the water, millions of people immediately go to the Pacific Ocean to see. So therefore they want Siddhi. Actually, there are yogis in Siddha Loka. Without any flying machine, they can go from one planet to another. Dudbhatamani, he went. Within a year, he came back. He went to Vaikuntha planet. Yogi, great yogi. He saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face, but was not excused. He went to beg pardon so that he may be saved from the Sudarshan Chakra. She went to Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, and all big demigods, please save me. The Sudarshan Chakra is after me. Everyone say, we are unable to do anything. He can go to Lord Vishnu. So he went to Lord Vishnu, he saw him, he talked with him, and Lord Vishnu also said that I cannot do anything. You must go to Ambarish Maharaj and fall down on his feet and beg his pardon, then you can sit. So this is the position. Ambarish Maharaj was a devotee, he did not know anything, he was simply depending on Krishna. So just see, he is powerful. And even the yogis are not so powerful.
Business, but simply to serve Krishna.
To this verse, where he explains more what this akama means. Akama is one who has no material desire. A living being, naturally, being the part and parcel of the Supreme Whole, Purusham Purnam, has his natural function to serve the Supreme Being, just as the parts and parcels of the body, or the limbs of the body, are naturally meant to serve the complete body. Desireless means, therefore, not to be inert like a stone, but to be conscious of one's actual position and thus desire satisfaction only from the Supreme Lord. Srila Jiva Goswami has explained this desirelessness as bhajaniya parama purusha sukha matra swa sukhatam in his Sandarbha. This means that one should feel happy only by experiencing the happiness of the Supreme Lord. This intuition of the living being is sometimes manifested even during the conditioned stage of a living being in the material world, and such intuition is expressed in the manner of altruism, philanthropy, socialism, communism, etc., by the undeveloped minds of less intelligent persons. In the mundane field, such an outlook of doing good to others in the form of society, community, family, country, or humanity is a partial manifestation of the same original feeling in which a pure living entity feels happiness by the happiness of the Supreme Lord. Such superb feelings were exhibited by the damsels of Brajabhumi for the happiness of the Lord. The gopis love the Lord without any return, and this is the perfect exhibition of the akama spirit. Kama spirit, or the desire for one's own satisfaction, is fully exhibited in the material world, whereas the spirit of akam is fully exhibited in the spiritual world. Thoughts of becoming one with the Lord or being merged in the Brahma Jyoti can also be exhibitions of kama spirit, if there are desires for one's own satisfaction to be free from all material miseries. A pure devotee does not want liberation so that he may be relieved from the miseries of life. Even without so-called liberation, a pure devotee is aspirant for the satisfaction of the Lord. Influenced by the kama spirit, Arjuna declined to fight in the Kurukshetra battlefield because he wanted to save his relatives for his own satisfaction. But being a pure devotee, he agreed to fight on the instructions of the Lord because he came to his senses and realized that satisfaction of the Lord at the cost of his own satisfaction was his prime duty. Thus, he became akam. That is the perfect stage of a perfect living being. Could you put the tape on again?
So there is a commandment that even if you have got desires, all kinds of desires, there is bad desires, any one, jnana siddhi, yoga siddhi, karma siddhi, dhyana siddhi, then simply go to Krishna. That's all. Jat karma siddhi, jat yoga siddhi, this also says, jat karma siddhi, you want to do something, this is all activities, and that you are Karmi, Jnani, a yogi, that are activities. The meditation, so-called meditation, then you have another activity, mental activity. So, why it is recommended like that? They are not devotees, they are sarvakama, if they go to worship Krishna, that is, there is facility. This life. Dhruva Maharaj, he was sarvakama. He wanted material happiness. He was insulted by his stepfather. He determined that I shall have such kingdom which even my father also did not enjoy. My father's wife has insulted me. I said, so this kind of determination is there, and that I shall show. So it was sarvakam. When Narad approached Dhruva Maharaj and informed him, my dear boy, you are a prince, you are so delicate, you cannot accept this troubles of living in the jungle. It is very, very difficult. Great, great sages, they could not. You better go home. And when you get old, when time is right, you can come. Now you go home. So, you are the son of Kshatriya, you are so determined. He said, my dear sir, I thank you for your instruction. But I am so rascal, I cannot accept this. I am Kshatriya. Your, this Mamanikar instruction will not be acceptable by me. So if you can give me any mantra by which I can see the Supreme Lord, just talk of it. I want to see. Then Narayana Muni, he is so retiring, he is not going to say again, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Chant. And he saw Krishna, Vishnu, within 6 months. He was so determined. And, but when Krishna offered him, now, you ask me what is life and death for me, you know, under so much severe austerities, you can take. So, you are sorry. Now, Sahin Kita told me, Varana Jati, my dear Lord, I have no more any desire. I don't want it. I want everything. Not only everything, more than everything. I have seen you. So I don't want anything. This chance is there. Even with your calm desire, you execute devotional service. Make connection with the Supreme Lord. A time will come, you will become aham. No. Time will come. Therefore it is a God. Not that Sarvakama goes to Krishna and simply bothers him, give me this. No. Let him talk like that, give me this. Krishna will see to that. But by devotional service, if he comes in contact with Krishna seriously, then time will come, he will become aham. Therefore it is devotion. Not that it is advised that you go to Krishna and ask all nonsense from him. That is not pure devotion. Pure devotion is aham. Nothing. So it is recommended here only that a devotee, even he is foolish in the beginning, to ask from Krishna all material facilities, and still when he is engaged in devotion, when he comes to the perfectional state, or when he comes in contact with the pure devotee, he gives us all this nonsense. And as a pure devotee, he simply engages himself without any return, without any profit in the service of the Lord. Thank you.
So in the 11th verse, the topic is continued as to how those persons who have materialistic desires of three different kinds, karmi, jnani, and yogi, how can they come out of that and take to the full worship of Krishna. So the verse says, all the different kinds of worshippers of multi-demigods can attain the highest perfectional benediction, which is spontaneous attraction, unflinchingly fixed upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead only by the association of the pure devotees of the Lord. Transcendental knowledge, text 12, in relation with the Supreme Lord Hari, is knowledge resulting in the complete suspension of the waves and whirlpools of the material world. Such knowledge is self-satisfying due to its being free from material attachments, and being transcendental, it is approved by authorities. Who could fail to be attracted? So because pure devotees of the Lord, they are so tightly, inextricably connected with Krishna's energy, Krishna's internal energy, Krishna's service, which is completely spiritual. It is so sweet and fragrant and tasty. It is everything that we had hoped for and more. It is everything that we wanted when we were looking in the shadow of the material world. So by that association and the taste gotten from that association, then one is gradually transferred and one gives up one's material desires, and one also similarly desires to serve Krishna and please Krishna and not please oneself. When one pleases Krishna, when one has that desire, and only that desire within one's heart, that is called bhakti. And as Prabhupada, or rather, Sukadeva explains in text 12, that the results of this association, where one becomes spontaneously attracted and unflinchingly fixed on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is love. This is the spontaneous platform of spiritual love, bhakti, which comes so much by the association of exalted Vaishnavas. This transcendental knowledge that one gets from them, it's in relationship to the Supreme Lord, and it completely suspends the waves and whirlpools of the material modes. In other words, all miseries vanish. Whirlpools that suck us down. This is what material desires are like. They're like a whirlpool. You want one thing. You put your hand in the whirlpool to pull out something for your own pleasure. And instead of you pulling out something, you get completely sucked in and your whole life is gone. And suddenly you find yourself 70 years old having nothing that you wanted. You may have the externals, the pieces that you've accumulated in one sense, but the thing that you wanted, the satisfaction of the heart, has escaped. The pleasure, the relationship has escaped. And we've been sucked in and tossed around by the waves. So this knowledge of our relationship with Krishna is so powerful, it results in the complete suspension of the waves and whirlpools of the material modes, the material world. Such knowledge is self-satisfying due to its being free from material attachment. It has nothing to do with matter, and it is self-satisfying and transcendental and approved by authorities because it awakens our natural relationship with Krishna. And therefore, who could fail to be attracted? So our material desires, they're given up willingly. The more we get the higher taste, param visvanavartate, of the sweetness of our relationship with Krishna, and that desire has to explode within our consciousness, and our mind, our consciousness has to become saturated with that desire to serve and love Krishna. And then, if we die with that consciousness, then we will go to Krishna.
Okay, thank you very much. It's a long class and everyone listened very attentively and very tolerantly. Thank you very much. So tomorrow we'll continue, and it's still not clear about Friday. There may be a program on Friday, so I don't know how to fit in the third class. So.